Blog Talk Radio.
Pour yourself a cup of tea, put your feet up, and relax. Show host Randy Fine, narcissistic abuse expert, compassionate counselor for clients worldwide, and author of the groundbreaking new book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being are all that matters. Time to Heal is a fundraising single written and performed by Johnny Z for the Amy Winehouse Foundation. For more information, please go to johnnymusic.com, johnnymusic.com. And now, it's time to meet Randy, show host of the podcast enjoyed by fans around the globe, A Fine Time for Healing.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your show host, Randy Fine. Today is September 11th, 17 years after the 9/11 tragedy that impacted the lives of every American in some way and impacted the entire world in some way. It's important to realize that thousands who were directly affected by this darkest of days are still carrying an unimaginable burden of grief. Day after day. I wanted to start the show off by just saying a prayer. And this is in memory of September 11th, 2001. May we never forget the beautiful souls who tragically died that day in a senseless tragedy on American soil. May we always be diligent in protecting our country from those who so desperately want to harm us. And may we stand united against them. May we ensure that this never again occurs in the land of the free. May every American citizen feel safe on their own land and be free from evil forces. May we always be blessed, protected, and loved. May we send prayers to the families who lost their loved ones that day and pray for all the souls who passed. And may we all pray for peace. Today's special guest, world-renowned grief psychologist Edie Nathan, was one of the only women therapists at Ground Zero, where she was called upon to apply all of her skills to negotiate the ocean of hopelessness, loss, and destruction. According to Edie, everyone's experience of trauma, abuse, or the loss of a loved one is as unique as a fingerprint. And in truth, you never really get over the resulting grief, but learn to integrate it into your life. In Edie Nathan's newly published book, It's Grief, The Dance of Self-Discovery Through Trauma and Loss, she says grief, trauma, and loss can strike in a moment, today, or from a long past memory retrieved, and disrupt the norms in every part of your life. Her practical insights can help you get your life back. So today we're going to talk with Edie, and she's going to explain to us how this grieving process works and how we can get through it. And I'd love to introduce you to my special guest. Good morning, Edie.
Good morning, Randy. Good to be here.
It's great to have you. So I know that today we're talking about your book, It's Grief, The Dance of Self-Discovery Through Trauma and Loss. And because it is 9/11, can you talk a little bit about your experience with Ground Zero?
I certainly can. It's 17 years ago. It's hard to believe that it's really that long ago. And What happened, I was actually at home and not able to get into the city on 9/11, and thankfully on 9/12 was able to take a train into the city, and through a series of I don't know, movement, a lot of movement, I ended up at the Armory, which was really where families were asked to go and report and, you know, list their family members' names. They, you know, they would collect data. And what ended up happening, there was, you know, certainly a lot of chaos, but so many wonderful people were there trying to just make sense out of the chaos. And I ended up being called by this one wonderful lieutenant. She was a female policewoman, and she said, "Come on, we need your help." And before I knew it, I was part of a group of professionals going down to Ground Zero, and that was quite an experience. So we were given clothing to replace the clothing that we had on. We were given hats and face masks, and then taken into what had been the old American Express building to help anybody, any of the guys who were coming out of the pits, and that's what they were called, to, you know, help them just find out where their cars were, or just get reacclimated after having been working for 12 and 18, 24 hours.
And what was that like for you?
It's a very curious experience, Randy. It's kind of surreal. There was no thought process. So, you know, I'm here. How did I get here? It was just, I almost didn't want to be anywhere else, but it really didn't hit me, the fact that I was there, until many, many months later, which is really like grief. I mean, oftentimes that first phase of grief is what I call emotional armor, and you're kind of numb, and maybe you're internally hysterical, or, you know, you're in a little bit of denial. And I had this kind of tunnel vision, if you will, and I just knew that that's where I needed to be. It actually calmed me to be helping, and perhaps, you know, you yourself deal with people who've had traumatic experiences, and sometimes being in a trauma helps to calm them. And from my own personal life experience, being in, I guess, the thick of it, grounded me. I knew what to do and how to handle that, and being able to use my own self experience and personal experience to help others. And that's really one reason why I wrote the book.
Okay. And it is so, so greatly needed. And this is such a beautiful book with such amazing tools for grieving. And we're going to get into that in just a minute. Did you follow up with any of these people that you met that day on the 13th? On the 12th?
It was the 12th, and
I
I went down to to the city on the 12th, but actually it wasn't until, I'd say, about 4 days later that we were taken down to Ground Zero. So,
okay.
It's a funny thing. No, I have not really, you know, didn't stay in touch with anyone. It didn't seem that was what the role was. We were really triaging. We were trying to deal with emergency situations. So we were kind of like an ER doctor, where, you know, the patient comes in and then the patient is triaged to the next best help that they can get, or they're sent home. With that said, over the years, I've run into people in the city, and people who worked at the Armory, people who, you know, worked in the hospitals, and, you know, we greet one another warmly as if having met an old friend.
Right. That bonds you forever.
Yeah, it bonds you forever. That's exactly it, Randy. It bonds you forever, and it's one of those like lightning moments of, oh wow, you know, we shared something, and there are no words. It's really a body sensation, and how we hold the physical sensations of that experience and the memory really in the body. And so many people who are grieving or who experienced 9/11 and were here in the city, and even people who weren't here, I think that, you know, trauma is certainly held in the body, and loss and grief is held in the body, and that's where you might experience it first. So,
yes.
Yeah.
What an amazing experience, but obviously you were called to be there, so that was an important day for you and for everyone who benefited by you being there. So let's talk about grief. And you say in your book that your clients often portray their anxiety and depression as emotional prisons from which there is no escape.
Yeah.
And that, you know, how tricky grief can be, because it doesn't necessarily come from the things we think we would grieve over. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. That's exactly correct. We don't expect how we're going to be triggered, and that's why it's called a trigger. You know, sometimes we can and we can plan for them, and I actually, you know, address that in the book, like keeping a calendar and having a calendar that you mark up for the year that you of known triggers. But then there are times when we are triggered by a scent, and our sense of smell is so powerful and potent, and we're triggered by a word that someone uses, or we see someone walking in front of us, and they're walking with a swagger that is reminiscent of a lost loved one, or of even someone we haven't seen in a while, and it filters through all of the different parts of our body. You know, I talk about, you know, the physical senses and you know, sight, smell, sound, and those are all potential ways that our triggers come in.
Now, what are some of the things that we may grieve over? Because it's not just passing of a loved one or a friend, or in this situation, you know, a crisis of the nation or whatever, trauma. We grieve over other losses, right?
We certainly do, and that's a great question. You and I spoke before the program started today, and, you know, we were talking about how grief kind of needs to come out of the closet, and because it's really everywhere, and we might not interpret it as such. It can be, you know, divorce, loss of a limb, being in the adoption triad where, you know, you've given up a child, or the child is looking for their birth mother, grief, loss of a pet. So it's the way that one handles grief, or the diligence in which grief presents itself is different depending on what you've lost. But grief is grief, and it's an important conversation to be having. And one of the things that you mentioned is, you know, someone coming into your office and, you know, saying, oh, you know, I'm anxious and I'm depressed and I feel like I can't concentrate or think. And you said you're grieving, and that's it. It's so often we can misidentify symptoms as, you know, when we kind of just look at them separately, oh, you're dealing with an anxiety issue or you're dealing with depression. But really, you know, if we really look at it, we're looking at grief. And once someone can say, oh my God, I'm grieving, it gives them a whole different platform from which to express what's going on within their bodies, within their souls, within their psyches. And that becomes a wonderful place for a conversation to begin. And it actually can be relieving. You know, I'm no longer identified as this just depressive person. I actually am grieving, and there are steps that I can take to help me deal with these senses that are overwhelming, and no one grieves exactly the same way. And I often say grief is like your fingerprint, and it's also one of your greatest teachers.
It truly is. And when we're in the thick of it, it feels as if it's never going to end. And sometimes, you know, sometimes we feel like we want to get up and do something to try to push through the process. But that's not really what we do initially. I mean, I guess eventually it gets to the point where you want to begin living your life. But can you explain that process to us?
The process of, kind of wanting to
cocoon
first?
Well, from the point of, you know, when you start to feel it, how, when it's okay to sit with it and allow it, when it's time to move on, when it's time to get up and begin reliving your life, how do we know these things?
You know, that's, again, a great question. The timeline is different for everyone because it really is a very individual process. And some people are going to dance with this and they're going to move in and out of it. And what I mean by that is there are going to be times when you feel, oh, today I've got the strength. I'm going to go out. I'm going to venture out. I'm going to meet a friend. I'm going to go take a yoga class. And yoga is actually a wonderful de-stressor for anyone who's dealing with trauma or loss and the tenderness that's held in the body. So it's not for anyone to say, okay, this is the right or wrong way to go out into the world. What I would say is if after 6 months, a year, and again, it's not like grief goes away, but if it is still creating such a big obstacle in your life that it's hard for you to live, it's hard to get out of bed, it's hard to be social if you were social or read a book if, you know, you love to read, then, you know, seek out help. Seek out an individual therapist or seek out a group or go to a chat room if you'd rather be anonymous or even do some exercise. Learn some deep breathing exercises. One of the things that I talk about is getting in touch with all of your senses so that you can say, oh, well, what am I smelling? What am I feeling in my body? And it actually starts to get you in touch with your body, and getting in touch with the body is actually very helpful in healing.
I love this this line in your book. This just struck me. It's perfect. You say, don't judge the way you're handling your emotional turmoil. Don't should on yourself.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that.
That's one of my common, you know, I use that a lot. Don't should on yourself, because we do that all the time, don't we? We should on ourselves. We say, oh, you know, I should be doing this and I should be doing that. And, you know, and hopefully, you know, we get to a place where we're not doing that. And there are no shoulds in grief.
That's absolutely true. You know, there are stages, and I guess we can, there are recognizable stages, but we don't go through them in any particular order. And we can go through them multiple times. What are your feelings about the stages of grief?
So, you know, it's curious because actually one of the things that I talk about in the book is changing the word stage to phase. And the idea that when we can change, when we look at the phases of grief, because a stage can often be finite, and the way that they were originally laid out, these stages, it was like, you know, you start here and you end here, and within the phases, as you really put it, is that you're going to move, you know, in and out of them, and there's no right particular order. So you might be angry and feeling like you're enraged, and then you might feel like anxious, but and they might go together. They might actually walk together. And I see that the first phase actually is that emotional armor, and it is emotional armor. Your numbness actually causes to protect you, and even the hysteria or the denial and protest, they serve to protect you, and we all need that protection. So I will say to anyone who comes into work around their grief is, you know, don't have an expectation that this is, that there's going to be some order or that there's a right order for the way you learn to cope with and dance with your grief. And it is a dance. There's no one right way. So do it the way you're going to do it. And don't let anybody tell you it's wrong, because it's right for you.
How important is validation of your experience in your ability to heal from it?
The first person that needs to validate it is you. However, our brain, you know, Randy, our brains are really tricky sometimes. And they make us, our brain sometimes makes us question, did this really happen? And sometimes we need witnesses. And whether it's in a friend or it's a therapist or it's a journal to help us remember the data, the facts of what we know, of what we experienced. And those witnesses, even if the witness comes from a part of ourself that is an archetypal cheerleader, if you will, that cheerleader can say, yes, this did happen, and yes, this can be validated. And we need the validation, and we need, because our memories will sometimes fade, and again, that's a means of protection. But there are times when we do need to remember, but we need to remember peacefully.
It's true. You know, I've had people who have grieved losses, and nobody will validate that experience. And it's very, very difficult for them to begin this process and get through it when no one will agree that it even happened. So that's kind of why I wanted to know that. Now, you brought up the idea of the archetypes, and you have different ones, different archetypes that we can use. Can you talk about that?
Sure, absolutely. An archetype is a universal symbol. And some people, you know, may or may not be familiar with an archetype, but we have archetypes all over. We have them, you know, an archetype is a symbol that we all know, and it doesn't matter what language you speak, it doesn't matter what your background is, it doesn't matter where in the world you are from. When we think of mother, we all have an image of mother. And we think of father, and we all have an image of father. And those are universal archetypes. So there are also other archetypes. There is the trickster archetype that, you know, kind of just exactly what we were talking about. Did this happen? I need a witness. I'm not really sure what was going on. And that's kind of like the trickster archetype. And there are shadows to that, like what we don't want to look at. Like perhaps that trickster is a way for us to avoid what we do need to look at. If we think, oh, this didn't happen, if this didn't go down, that actually it protects us, and maybe we need that. But to be able to identify, to have a language, oh, I need my cheerleader, I need that sense of mother or mothering. I wonder what friend I could call upon who might be able to give that to me, or I wonder if I can reach out to my own mother, or I wonder if I can access the mother within myself. And this is all part of healing, actually, to be able to have that conversation with the self. So, for example, the survivors of 9/11, the men and women who lost loved ones, you know, they may have needed to get in touch with the hero or heroine archetype, and a way to learn to live with what they lost and then make themselves more aware of their surroundings, or be helpers, or create a life that is a kind of a badge of, okay, yes, I lost someone I loved, but now I have created an organization where people can come and gather and talk about this. Ms. Sears actually started an organization called Tuesday's Child, and it's for anyone who survived, any of the children who survived the 9/11 disaster and tragedy, who lost parents and who needed help navigating through that. Because, you know, when a child loses a parent, the parent that is alive, they lose them too a little bit. And we sometimes don't think about that, you know, Randy, but when we lose one parent, the surviving parent is grieving and often has difficulty navigating through their own need to parent because their grief is so intense. So Tuesday's child really enabled these kids to have a place to go, to grieve, to work together, and so many of them now are out there and honoring the parents they lost by becoming, you know, attorneys and helping people who are in need, or fire, if their father or mother was a fireman, a fire person, you know, or police person, they will absolutely, like, engender a sense of, I'm paying that life forward.
I can understand that. I can understand, you know, wanting to do something to bring meaning to the experience, some meaning. And a lot of heroes rise out of these situations.
That's right.
I really like the archetypes. I really like that because you're right. We feel very lost when we're in the middle of grief, and if we can attribute something to it, an archetype to it, and allow us to understand that that's that archetype we're calling on at that moment, that that's what we're experiencing. It really, oh my gosh, I just, as I think about it, I just think it's so valuable to be able to do that.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, and that's actually one of the reasons the title is The Dance of Self-Discovery Through Trauma and Loss, because the perspective is that if you're going to engage in a conversation around grief, the healing is going to be less about what's outside of the self and more about what's inside of the self. And those archetypes are a very personal conversation. So to say, I'm having a hard day, I need to get in touch with my cheerleader, is actually a brain changer, because you can change the impulses. Yeah, you can change the impulses of the brain. You can say, okay, I'm going to get out of this negative cognition. I'm going to get out of this negative thinking. I'm going to get into a more positive thought. I'm going to access my cheerleader. What would my cheerleader say to me today? So it's not an external exercise as much as an internal one.
Amazing. This is just brilliant. I just love it. And we kind of know through our intuition or whatever it is what we need at that moment, don't we? We don't have to say, oh, well, let's see. In order to get out of this today, I better, you know. It's kind of like we kind of know what we need, right?
You know, we do. And sometimes it's buried, and I'm sure that you know that in your work as well. Like people who I work with, I certainly believe that they have the answers, and I'm really merely there as a witness, but also as a guide, and to help them discover what they know. So, and it makes me think about one of the gentlemen I worked with when he came out of the pits, and he said, I don't remember where my car is. Now, he knew deep down where his car was, but we just had to, you know, layer back, like the peeling back of an artichoke, to get to the heart of the matter. So we had to go through some prickly things to get to the heart of the matter, and once we got to the heart of the matter, it was like, ah, eureka, I know where my car is. Yeah. And it is those golden moments, those eureka moments, that people who are grieving will have, and a sense of, okay, I can know myself, and I do have the answers. And it is so empowering, Randy. It's so empowering to know that you've got the answers.
Oh, my gosh, it is. Wow. Fantastic. So also, you know, in the book, later on in the book, you talk about how sometimes we change as people as we grow through this process, and others don't necessarily understand that change that we've gone through and how we go ahead and approach that. Can you talk about that?
Sure. Actually, one of the exercises that I have people do in the book is create two circles, and they are in the middle of each circle, and I say before and after. and put people who were in your life before and the degree of closeness you had to them as it relates to you being in the center, and then how does that change after? And then a year later, how has that changed? And relationships will change. Some people who were far away will move in, and some people who were very, very close move away. And why people move away, oftentimes it feels personal. But, you know, it's often not about you. It's almost never about you. It's often about them and their ability or inability actually to tolerate maybe grief or loss. Maybe it brings up too much within them, even though we take it personally. And we're not stagnant, you know. We're not just stagnant water. We're always moving. We're always shifting. And when one thing changes within us, everything around us changes. It's just, it's kind of just like, you know, the law of how things go down in life. So if we think about it, something dramatic, something intense, something really huge occurred in your life, and I believe that probably anybody who went through 9/11, we were forever changed, and the people in our lives either moved closer to us or they moved away, and that change, you know, we might become better selves, and we may not be able to tolerate actually people who we tolerated in the past. And we may actually also make decisions of, you know, I actually don't want that person in my life anymore, or I don't want to work where I was working, or I'm going to be a different parent, or I'm going to engage in a relationship, but this relationship is going to be different and I'm going to be a different husband, wife, partner in this next relationship that I'm in. So when we are faced with grief, with loss, with trauma, it does change us, and we don't stay the same, and we can't. We just don't, and we can't. It's just it's just not part of how things operate.
Right. When we grow and change, we often grow and change away from other people, and then towards new people.
Absolutely. That's exactly what happens. And again, there's no judgment around it. It just is. It's just the way it is. And, you know, some people, you know, stay in our lives for a week, and that's exactly how long we've needed them. And sometimes they stay in for months, and sometimes they stay in for a lifetime. So we do have a choice, and realizing that you have a choice. And you also have a choice about how you hold your grief. And are you going to let it continue to grip you and wear it as a badge, or are you going to learn to move with it, to dance with it, to say, okay, yeah, it's part of me, but it doesn't have to own me. And therein lies the differences between the grip of grief and the dancing with it.
Wow. So well said. Love that.
Thank you.
So your book, It's Grief, The Dance of Self-Discovery Through Trauma and Loss, would you say that for some that would be the tool that would help them through it and then they would not need therapy? Or do you think that everyone could use the benefit of talking directly to someone?
You know, it's such a good question, and everyone is different. Some people, you know, think that to go to a therapist, you kind of have to be crazy. And if they don't think of themselves as crazy, they're not going to go. And so who is it for me to say to anyone, you know, you need to go to therapy. And if you don't go to therapy, you know, there's something wrong with you. And it's the only way to get help. And it's not, you know. But what I would say is you need to take on the self. And you need to look at yourself and say, okay, what's working, what's not working, and how am I going to live the best life I can? Because this is, you know, grief is a teacher. It is masterful in the way it helps you to look at the self. And I had certainly a lot of losses when I was a kid, and later when I was in my late 20s, I lost my first love and I dealt with sexual abuse. So I certainly had losses throughout. And I would say, had I not had those losses, I wouldn't be who I am. And, you know, did I go to therapy? Yeah, I went to therapy. But that doesn't mean that everyone needs to go to therapy if they experience these losses. It's just, what are you able to have the life you want? And if you're not, what's stopping you? And to actually create a list, write it down, write the pros and the cons. Look at what your negative thoughts are around your life. Look at the positive thoughts. How can you, you know, change some of your negative thinking into the positive thinking? If it's hard to do it on your own, then maybe seek out a friend who's going through something similar and, you know, work with one another. Sometimes that can help. And if not, seek out a group, you know, to seek out an individual therapist, or even go to like an intensive, like we have in New York, we have Omega and we have Kripalu. These are centers where people gather. And you can go just for a week for wellness and take yoga and exercise. And just actually getting the body to work can actually help you heal. So therapy is certainly one way, but meditation, yoga, exercise, eating well, sleeping, these are all ways to help the body heal.
So what about our need from our logical mind to analyze and understand the why of things happening? I think we all do that when things happen. Why? Why? Why me? Why did this happen to that person? Why am I going through this and other people aren't? Mm-hmm. What do you say to that need to analyze and understand?
You know, the why question is always a tough one, the why me. And I don't know if it's a question that can even be answered. Maybe it's important to understand that there is the why me, and how does the why me lead into a sense of anger or anxiety or depression, and to refocus the why me into the emotions that we might be feeling around it. Because I don't know if we can ever really answer the why me, but we can certainly redirect it and get in touch with how the why me creates this sense of rage within you, or how the why me creates anxiety, and how you can break down the anxiety. And actually, in the book, I label the anxiety, you know, is it 1 to 4, is it 5 to 7, is it, you know, is it 8 to 10, and really understanding what the emotions are. You know, why me? Maybe I need to learn something. Maybe it's here for a reason, because one of the things I've learned in life is I might not like something that happened to me or a tragedy that occurred, and I may not understand it, but somewhere along the line, it becomes a gift. And it's a gift in a way that I could never have imagined, and I see this in my clients time and time again, where they walk in and it is the why me, and through the process of looking at the emotions and looking at their bodies, at their souls, at their psyches, both the conscious and the unconscious, they're actually able to come out with, wow, I've learned things that I never thought would come into my awareness. I have become a better person. I have created an adventure in my life that would never have happened had I not lost someone in 9/11, had I not been given up for adoption, had my husband not been killed on a train. And these are all parts of the self that get developed because of loss, because of a trauma.
Beautifully said. It's so true. We grow from adversity. While we're in the middle of it, it's very difficult to understand that. That is,
mm-hmm. that there is. And that's a big takeaway. You know, Randy, that's a big takeaway, is I can learn from adversity. I may not be able to learn from it in this moment, but there are going to be some lessons here. There might be some gifts, and I'm going to keep my eyes open. You know, keeping a marking up your calendar is another takeaway. These are going to be trigger days for me.
Yes.
So it's really important to have takeaways, honoring the emotions instead of just, you know, oh, well, I don't have time for this emotion today. Okay, you might not have time, but one of the things I talk about is actually creating a basket in your mind. And I'm going to put this into a beautiful basket, and I'm going to go back to it. Or I'm going to put it into a locker, and I'm going to lock it up. But later on today or tomorrow, I'm going to unlock that locker. I'm going to go to that basket, and I'm going to look at it. So those are some important takeaways of how you can actually, you know, integrate the grief, deal with it, and go about living your life. It's not that it won't come up, because it will, but how are you going to honor it? And it is through the tools.
Well, your book gives so many tools. Again, we're talking with Edie Nathan about her book, The Dance of Self-Discovery Through Trauma and Loss. The book is actually called It's Grief. This is available. Where can we buy this book, Edie?
So right now you can buy it through my website, edienathan.com, and in a few weeks, I would say 1st of October, you'll find it on Amazon.
Perfect. Okay, well, we're running out of time. This has been such an important show, and I thank you so much for all that you've offered. And this book, this is such a great book. I will be recommending it. I will be recommending it because grief is such a big part of healing any trauma. So thank you so much for being with me on this very, very important day.
Thank you.
And I know we'll be talking.
I hope that any 9/11 survivors who may be listening, I hope you have a peaceful day.
Oh, thank you. Yes, me too. Me too.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Randy, for this interview.
Okay. We will be in touch. Talk soon.
Okay. Thank you.
So we are out of time for today, but if you have any comments or questions about today's show, you can email me at loveyourlife@randygfine.com. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.
We hope you enjoyed today's programming. To learn more about Randy Fine, read her articles, or to make a counseling appointment with her, please visit randygfine.com. That's RANDIGFINE.com, or visit her on Facebook at Randy G. Fine.